can repeat. This is chapter 9 of Bhagavad Gita, text number 27. Whatever you do,
whatever you eat,
whatever you offer,
whatever you offer
or give away,
or
whatever austerities you may perform,
do that,
O son of Kunti,
as an offering to me.
Purport by His Divine Grace Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. That, thus, it is the duty of everyone to mold his life in such a way that he will not forget Krishna in any circumstance. Everyone has to work for maintenance of his body and soul together. And Krishna recommends herein that one should work for him. Everyone has to eat something to live. Therefore, he should accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Any civilized man has to perform sub-religious ritualistic ceremony. Therefore, Krishna recommends, do it for me. And this is called archan. Everyone has a tendency to give something in charity. Krishna says, give it to me. And this means that all surplus money accumulated should be utilized in furthering the Krishna consciousness movement. Nowadays, people are very much inclined to the meditational process, which is not practical in this age. But if anyone practices meditating on Krishna 24 hours a day by chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, around on his beads, he's surely the greatest meditator and the greatest yogi, as substantiated by the 6th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Yoginam api sarvesham tadgatenam taratanam shadavan bhajate yoma samayuktatamo mataha. That of all the yogis, the best one is the one that's always thinking of me in devotional service. That's that last verse of chapter 6. So this, when Lord Chaitanya was talking to Ramananda Roy, he asked him, you know, what's the highest thing? And at one point he gave this verse. Lord Chaitanya said there's much more. And he was digging in to get into, you know, understanding Radha and Krishna. But if someone is on a very high level, then automatically they're doing all these things. Everything is for Krishna. You don't have to think about it. That's why it says that the people in the, you know, in Vrindavan and Goloka or something, they don't have to follow regulated principles. It doesn't mean that they're all drunk and going to the casino and, you know, prostitution. It means that they don't have to worry about, you know, think about going to the temple or getting up for Mangalarti or chanting rounds, because they're automatically totally absorbed in Krishna all the time, in love. You can't imitate that. If someone tries to imitate that, then they'll just think of women and wine and fall down. We have to practice sadhana, vaidhi bhakti. It's not something bad. It's necessary. The nectar devotion, which we have some out there, is described in detail, all these things. And even a devotee that is completely advanced, like Srila Prabhupada, he still, you know, was very ordinary in his daily life. Chanted his japa, he studied, he went, he greeted the deities every day on time. You know, he took prasadam only, you know, he didn't act like some kind of Babaji. Once in a while we get a Babaji in our history, like there was one Vamsi Das Babaji. And there's many bogus Babajis, but he was certified by Bhaktisiddhanta. He had some deities of Gornatai, his servants just carried them around like this. And he had a little Gopal deity and he would talk to it all day long. And sometimes he would fast for a few days, so he wouldn't offer anything to the deities during that time. He did everything like completely wrong, according to normal. If he got a cold, he would eat yogurt, and, you know, he wouldn't put any warm clothes in the winter, and But he never got cold, he never... He was completely on a transcendental platform. And we cannot imitate that. Someone tries to imitate someone like that, and then they just become a disturbance in society. So, give everything to Krishna. And it says, all surplus money should be utilized for furthering the Krishna consciousness movement. Prabhupada stresses on that all the time, that we're meant to increase, make more people Krishna conscious, make more temples, make more Govindas, right? This Govindas can feed so many people prasadam every day, 250, 280 people every day. So that's really nice, but 2 could feed so much more, 10 could feed so much more. People will come. The Food for Life also feeds so many people. So that's making people come to Krishna consciousness. Book distribution is bringing people. Anyone who's a devotee and other people know about it, they influence people. So that's what we want to use our accumulated money. Not that one can't have a house and can't live and dress properly, but whatever is extra, just like people that aren't devotees, they use extra money for intoxication and for, you know, staying in expensive hotels and, right, getting room service. And they go into debt for things like that, thinking that it's enjoyment. There's extra money. Many people have a lot of extra money. Some people have so much, so they buy yachts, and, or they play golf, and, you know, they do all kinds of things. Devotees, they either arrange, you know, make a festival or give the money to the temple, to the devotees, so they can, you know, if they don't have time themselves, they give the money to the preachers, so the preachers can carry on with their work, help maintain the temple, or make a festival like Rath Yatra. Of course, takes a lot of energy, a lot of money, but it helps so many people to come to Krishna. So that's what, whatever you do, whatever you eat, do it as an offering to Krishna. So that's not so hard, prasadam, unless one insists he has to eat meat and fish or eggs or something. Then you can't offer that to Krishna. So if we want to offer everything to Krishna, we have to know what Krishna accepts. But there's no shortage of food, there's no shortage of varieties, much more variety actually in the proper Krishna conscious cooking. Whatever you do, do it for Krishna. Whether we're working, or taking care of the family, cleaning the house. It should be Krishna's house. The devotee understands that everything belongs to Krishna. This body is Krishna's body. He's given me, you know, some kind of proprietorship, but it belongs to Krishna. There's a story, Sanatana Goswami. He was very sick. He was traveling, trying to see Lord Chaitanya, and he walked through a very big jungle, Jharikhanda forest, still there in Bihar, India. And he got some bad water or something, and he got some sickness. And he had a lot of sores, oozing sores on his body, bad smell, blood and pus. And Lord Chaitanya, whenever he met him, because he considered him a great devotee, he would embrace Sanatana. And then that dirty stuff would get on his body. So Sanatana thought, my body is abominable and it's just making offense to the Lord, so better I kill myself. He was making plans to throw himself under the wheel of the Jagannath cart. Now in Jagannath Puri, the Jagannath cart has 18 wheels and they're very big, like this wide. Definitely, you wouldn't live very long if you got run over. A huge thing. So Lord Chaitanya, one day, he came every day to visit Haridas and Sanatana. And he just started talking about that suicide was in the mode of ignorance. And then Sanatana could understand it, that Lord Chaitanya knew his mind and did not approve. Then he said, this body belongs to me. You've given your body to me, and I have a lot of plans to utilize your body in service. So you have no right to take life. So the body belongs to Krishna and doesn't belong to us. Nobody can say, who does your body belong to? Right? When you're a baby, what do you have to say about what happens to your body, right? Your parents. Then you grow up and, mostly it's your parents, and society, and then maybe you have to go in the military, then it belongs to the government. They can send you anywhere they want, right? They can send you to the battle. You don't have any control over it. If you get a job, it belongs to the company. Some people are slaves. Still today, they just buy and sell them like animals. So they're owned by someone else. And then when you die, who's the proprietor, right? What happens to the dead bodies here? Bury them. So then gradually worms eat them. So depending on where you live, what culture you're in, even if you live here, they do cremate, many people cremate their bodies. The Muslims have to bury the body. Christians certainly want to bury the body. The Hindus have burned the body. So it becomes ashes. If someone's very poor in India, they just leave it. The dogs will eat it, or crows will eat it. They throw it in the river, the fish and the crows will eat it. And the Parsis in India and Bombay, they have one tower, and they put the dead body up on top of that tower, and the vultures eat it. Have you ever been there? Seen that? It's kind of in the middle of nowhere, and then all those birds are, going around and around, and every once in a while they swoop down in there, and they have a feast. So the body becomes stool, bird stool, dog stool, becomes ashes, becomes a worm stool, just becomes anything. It doesn't belong to us, so we're going somewhere else. After you leave your body, you have no say over what's going to happen to it. Maybe you made arrangements and, for your funeral and they do everything you wanted, but not always. Maybe the family will do something else. So the real proprietor is Krishna of everything. And then a devotee respects everyone's body, everyone, because they all belong to Krishna. Animals, other people, everything. We love them because it's all part and parcel of Krishna. So it says it's our duty to try to arrange our lives so that we won't forget Krishna. Like a lot of people here, they like to come to the temple at lunchtime or evening time before they go home or before they go back to work. So they're remembering Krishna then, at least for some time just before they get off for lunch, and then they're running to over here, and then they're running back to the office. afterward they're rushing here before they go home. So that helps them to remember Krishna. And if take some books home, then you'll remember Krishna, even if you don't read it. At least you might look at it once in a while. You might think, oh, I should read that. Or if we read about Krishna and hear about Krishna, then we'll remember Krishna, because you naturally remember whatever you heard about, because you talk about whatever we heard about. So it's always recommended to hear about Krishna. Here it says, whatever you offer and give away. So if you're giving donations, give it to Krishna. People have charitable instinct. We see that here if we go in Sankirtan. Many people, they're not very interested in a book, but if you just say, well, we'd like to give a donation, they like to. And we see so many people out collecting donations. People like to give. It's natural. Good people. They want to do something to help other people. If we really understood the real suffering of the world, that everyone is suffering so much because they're not connected with Krishna, then we would be very energetic to, you know, try to do something about that. When there's some sort of a crisis, I was in America, I don't know if it was, when was it, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, when that Katrina hurricane came. So, of course, that was all the news. You know, thousands of people have to leave their city, not just leave their house, leave their city. The city was 18 feet deep in water, a large part of the city. And the whole of America, in fact, the whole world, but especially America, because you know, people were mobilized like anything to collect money, to go there and distribute food and help people and open up their house for people to come and live in it. And doctors were coming from Israel and, you know, like everything. People were sending donations from all over the world. They got inspired because they saw all these pictures of how much suffering there was. Devotee sees everyone like that all the time, that everyone is suffering. That's the vision like Lord Brahma has. The demigods, they can see. We don't see them, but they can see this world, and they just feel like everyone is suffering so much. They're, you know, they're just, life is short, they don't know what to do or not to do, there's so much disease, you know, now there's so many things. But ultimately it's all due to forgetfulness of Krishna, so we want to help everybody. We want to go out and let them utilize their propensity to be charitable, so it goes to Krishna, then they get so much benefit, even they don't know. If they know, it's even better, but if they don't know even, if they just think, well, we're feeding the homeless, or they don't even know it's prasadam, or they get more benefit because than just giving ordinary charity, because it went to Krishna. Called the Gata Sukriti. And that will build up unknown pious activities. And then as a result of that, someone will get more and more Krishna. Meditation is so-called meditation. I don't know, like in New York City, there must be here also that Buddhists, some Buddhist meditation. They have so many meditation centers people go to. And if you ask those people, what do you meditate on? They can never tell you. You know, they do something. And they feel something because at least during that time they're not doing gross, you know, gross bodily activity. They get some relief. But it's not practical in this age, and it's not going to take them to the highest platform, not going to take them to Krishna. But meditating on Krishna is much easier. And many people may be a little averse when they hear about it because they think it's a religion. Yesterday I was standing outside here during the class, and one boy and girl came and they ran in, they took off their coat and shoes and they ran in here, sat down, got up and ran out. And I said, that was quick. And the boy said, well, she doesn't like these religious things. And I said, why did you come in the first place? I don't believe in God. It turned out they said they have friends here, but that's why they came. But as soon as she heard the talk that it's about God, she ran up like immediately. I said, what do you believe in? She said, I believe in what I want. I said, what do you want? I don't know. Ah, but I don't like God. I don't like religion. I'm out of here. I can't stand it. You know? So people are very confused, you know. And of course, the way that God is presented to people by so many so-called religious people, no wonder they don't want to believe in God. right? That God is angry, vengeful, you know, right? God is the cause of all the wars, and you know, they actually teach like that. God is going to punish you, you know, if you do anything wrong. God does not punish. His laws do when we want to surrender to Maya. Then we have to suffer, but it's not the personal will of the Lord. Krishna is just waiting, you know, to help everyone. Anyone who takes shelter, anyone who tries, comes to Krishna, anyone who asks for help, immediately Krishna will give it. He can remove someone completely from the prison house of the mature world. There are cases still all over the world, I suppose, where the president or the king or somebody, he can let someone out of prison. Just like act of mercy or something. Right? And there was some place where they let everyone out one time. Or there's a case in history, ancient history, where somebody's father had gone to hell or something, and then he got the message somehow or other that, you know, if they could chant one of the Bhagavad Gita chapters, he found some brahmana who was chanting very purely that chapter of Bhagavad Gita every day. And they finally, the potency of that pure chanting of the Bhagavad Gita was so much that they ordered Yamaraj to let everyone out of hell. He let everyone out from hell. So that power is there. Krishna can do that. Anyone who really surrenders to Krishna, even sentimentally, even a little bit, will get so much relief, and they'll get on the path to getting fully out. But if we could manage to just really, really surrender to Krishna all of a sudden, then he'd take us right out. Take you right back to Godhead, and you'd never remember, you know, the suffering. That's the mercy of Krishna. Prabhupada even told how one, in India, I think it's in India, might have been in, you know, it must have been in India, where Gandhi was in prison. So they have the cell that Gandhi stayed in, and you can go. You can go down and look at it, and go in there, and they lock you in, and you can sit there for a little while, you know, and then yeah, they let you out. You're not really in the prison. The president can go right in the prison. Talk, the lawyer can go in, and they lock him in. You know, but then when he says, I want to get out, they let him out. But the prisoner has to stay. But if the king is there, like the previous president of the United States, and most presidents do that, just before they leave office, they pardon a bunch of people from the prison. And then it's always a big scandal that it was some thing. But they have that power to let people out. So the devotee has that power to implore Krishna to help people. The devotees are praying to Krishna, please help these people. These people are suffering. They're either in hell already, or they're not quite in hell, but they're definitely on their way. Even if it's the royal road to hell, even if they live in a big penthouse and they're driving in a Rolls Royce car or whatever is supposed to be good, Bentley, Porsche, right? And they're speeding to hell. So the devotees worry about them. They don't think that all these people have it made, they're all right. They have so much opulence. You know, they have beautiful bodies. The beautiful body is not going to last very long. Right? And even the most beautiful body, not everybody will be attracted to it. Somebody might not think it's beautiful. And it's going to be racked with disease and, you know, all kinds of things. The most healthy, beautiful body gets sick. The mind becomes disturbed. You know, anything can happen. So we should be molding our life that, you know, we're thinking about Krishna. When will I go to the temple? I will chant every day at a certain time. You know, I'll read a little bit. You know, whatever we eat, we offer to Krishna. Can do that. many people are coming here to Govindas. They don't really know, but somehow they really like it. Right? Power of prasadam. One time we were distributing books in the airport in American Denver, and the devotee had a business at the time called Bliss Bars. They were very nice health bars, you know, called Bliss Bars. And previously he'd called it Govindas, but then they were very popular, and some of the chain stores that were selling them figured out that Govinda is Krishna. And they were Christians, so they wouldn't buy it anymore. So he changed the name of it to Varshana Farms. So one guy was screaming at us, "I don't want that book, it's the devil." You know, he was really, really into it. And then when he walked away, he started to walk away and he pulled this Bliss Bar out of his pocket because they were selling it in the airport. And he started to eat it, you know, and we said, "Do you know where that is?" You know, he said, we said, "That's Krishna, you know." No, it's not. It's Varshana Farms. You know, walked away. So that's the power. Prasadam is one of our great and Prabhupada weapons. Because even people don't know what it is, but they just eat it and they get purified. And then they'll become more and more attracted to Krishna. And if they know devotees are giving it, then, you know, they appreciate Hare Krishna, that they have good food. And gradually understand that it's something, what's making it so good is not just the recipe and the ingredients. That's part of it. But the consciousness of the cooks and that are doing it for Krishna and offering to Krishna, that's what makes it so nice. Because Krishna eats it. So anything that's connected with Krishna becomes better and better. That's why you all come here for lunch. And we hope you'll come again and again and bring more and more people here and we can handle. Prabhupada said one time in Australia, "We'll feed the whole city." And at that time, there's just a few devotees there. The reporter is, "What? You know, how can you do that? You can't do that." Prabhupada said, "You bring them, we'll show you." You bring the whole city, we'll feed them. You know? So, Krishna can do anything. There's temples in India that are feeding 25,000 people every day. Full meal. Volunteer workers, people donate all the food. Can go on. We're feeding probably 1,000 every day in London between the restaurant and the Food for Life. Right? More, yeah. Parashuram is about 600 in here. So that's a beginning. But we want to do more. So thank you very much. We're a little late with the prasad today. Any questions? Where's the food? Huh? To wait so long?
So I have a question. Sort of like, you used to talk about Krishna.
What?
You always talk about Krishna and sort of say that everything sort of like predestined, Krishna to control everything, in terms of every footstep, every minute that you take in his life. And you get asked to say, well, how can that be? Because you should, as a human being, be in control of whatever you want to achieve, whether it's trying to be successful in your profession or whatever it may be. But what would you say in terms of like you not being sort of like the sole person that in charge of your own fate? It's not really destiny that's in charge in terms of...
What's the question exactly?
I think in terms of like...
You gotta speak, you know, I can't...
Basically, is it true that everything is predetermined?
Determined.
Yeah, predetermined.
Yes and no. We create, everything that's happening is happening because of our karma. So it's determined by our own desires and activities. Krishna has to arrange it because we don't have the power to arrange anything except to desire, and then what we want, and then according to what we do, we get reactions. And there's always new choices being made, so things are happening. It's not like Krishna just writes a script and then we just get pushed around. It's our own desire. We make our own destiny. Destiny is there. We create it by our own desires and activities. Is that all right? Someone was asking the same thing yesterday. It's a common question. It's intelligent. And it philosophically, and I don't know, in Hindu and Christian, it's a debate that different groups have. Some say it's all predestined, that God just designs everything, and you have absolutely no choice, and so there's no use doing, you know, it doesn't matter what you do, because it's just gonna, that's not the case at all. It does matter what we do, because whatever we do, whatever we decide to do according to what circumstance we're in, is going to mean what happens in the future. So nothing's happening by accident. You know, we're meeting certain people, we're, you know, certain things are happening to us because of our karma and Krishna's direction. And as one surrenders to Krishna, then sometimes it's not exactly karma, because Krishna will reduce the reactions. You know, maybe we deserve much more suffering, but it'll be less. He'll arrange different things to help us if our desire starts to be that we just want Krishna. And if someone fully surrenders to Krishna, then they're relieved of all their past karmic reactions. But mostly it's, you know, we're still cruising along, but whatever we're doing for Krishna does not create future karmic reactions. It's free from karma. Prasadam is free from karma. Because it's all, everything belongs to Krishna, so when you offer that thing to Krishna, then it's properly used, and then it doesn't create karma. Debt. All right? Any more? Ready? All right. Thank you very much. Please read Bhagavad Gita if you have it. If you don't have it, get one or two, and keep one in your office and one in your car or one in your house, one in your pocket. Right? Keep them everywhere, then you're more likely to read it. Or we have CDs with the Bhagavad Gita you can listen. So...